Hello and welcome once again to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host, Jason Anderson, and you're listening to episode number 23. On this week's show, Super Sigma's Photo Walks and Seminars. Got a lot of news from the blog and around the web to share with you. I'll also have a couple personal experience stories about photo walks and seminars. A couple little personal triumphs or accolades that I've received recently that I'd like to share with the listening audience. And we're going to wrap out the show this week because there is actually quite a bit of maintenance news to share, but we'll wrap out the show with some listener questions and answers. Had quite a few of them. Apparently that's becoming quite the popular thing to send questions in to me to stump me, because a lot of these are really good questions. So you're going to want to stick around and hear these questions and give you an opportunity to submit more questions to me for addressing on the podcast series. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be back right after the theme music. Welcome back for our first segment this week here on the blog. Podcast, rather. I have a couple of news tidbits from around the photo industry. First up, Adobe has released an update to their Adobe Camera Raw. I believe this is still in beta, but there are a lot of new camera models that have been added to that ACR. Adobe Camera Raw. So if you are a latest and greatest kind of person and you want to make sure you are current and up to speed, check that ACR list, see if your camera falls into that category, and if it does, make sure you go ahead and download that so you can do your RAW conversions. Even for those of you that don't have it, there may be some other updates in there as well that can add to some functionality. So do step over to Adobe, check that out, and pick up the new RAW converter if it's needed. Another little news tidbit from around the web that's Canon specific, since this is the Canon Blogger podcast for Learning Digital Photography. I saw a firmware update was announced, I think, about a week ago now for the 5D Mark II. So for the 5D Mark II owners, you're going to want to go out and pick that up. I guess that does correct a couple sensor issues that Canon was aware of that they have fixes out for now. Also in Canon news, the 1DS Mark III, I believe it is. 1DS Mark III is the latest version of the high-end Canon SLR. They were having an issue with some oil leaking onto your low-pass filter. So for the 1DS Mark III owners, you're going to want to check your serial number against Canon's website. You may be suspect to some oil leakage from the hinges, I believe, where the low-pass filter slides up and down. And they do have a free fix. All you have to do is send your body in, and they will take care of that for you. One other little shout-out from the news in the blog and around the web goes out to the good folks of Louisville, Kentucky. Chuck Condor specifically wrote a question into the blog. I'll get to that question a little bit later. But the little tidbit that he shared with me is the good folks in Louisville do have a regular get-together where photog types get together, share pictures and thoughts with one another. They're talking about HDR right now, high dynamic range processing. And Chuck wrote a question into the blog about that, and I'll share that later. But I wanted to give a quick shout-out to Chuck to say, hey, thank you very much for the question. Glad you guys are enjoying the blog and the podcast. So that's the little shout-out for the week from around the blog and on the web. A couple other little news items of a personal note. First off, photographybb.com has released their latest issue of their free online magazine. In this month's issue, you'll notice my name on the cover. That's right, I wrote the cover story for Photography BB's online magazine, where I take a look at a spot from around the world, they call it, and I took a look at Isla de Mujeres in Mexico. It's actually an island off the coast of Mexico. Shared a lot of shots from there and did a little write-up on the island itself. I thought there were some pretty good shots in there, so I shared them with the magazine and that readership as well. So if you're interested, go over to photographybb.com/magazine and download that free copy for your own perusal. There's some excellent articles in there. Another article I thought was very interesting was Shooting the Stars, where there an article talked about celebrities, famous people who actually enjoy photography. One that I found of particular interest because I just saw the most recent Star Trek movie was that Leonard Nimoy is a photographer, and it gave a link to his website. I won't be a spoiler here. I'll encourage you to go download the Photography BB magazine from their site. Just go to photographybb.com/magazine to get the latest issue. I think it's issue number 16. So they've got 16 issues out. I've put out a couple articles in past issues as well, so feel free to download the entire archive. Makes for some great reading. They got some very talented writers on staff there, and it's all free. And free information is always good information. So go check it out at your leisure, photographybb.com. Other blog slash podcast news for you. I just heard back from the good folks over at Sigma Photo, believe it or not. I am going to be reviewing two Sigma lenses. Someone had written into the blog, actually, a couple folks had written into the blog asking about specific Sigma lenses. If I had taken a look at them, said I had not, but I would see what I can do. Put out a couple emails. Asked a couple questions, and next thing you know, Sigma said we would like to send you some lenses for review. So I'm going to be getting two lenses from them within the next week or so here, and I will have a review out for you hopefully within about a month or so. I've got about a month to shoot with them, get a handle on them, get the ins and outs, and share the nitty-gritty details with you here on the podcast and on the blog. So that's some exciting news from the blog podcast scene. Coming up after the break, that's going to wrap it up for news this week. I don't want to go into too many nitty-gritty details. A lot of you keep up with blogs and podcasts on a regular basis. So rather than get bogged down in all the news for the last couple weeks, I'll just refer you to the blog posts that I've been doing. A couple of really popular ones had covered things like HDR, photo walks, and seminars, things of that nature. But coming up after the break, I'm going to share with you a very specific story about photo walks and seminars. You're going to want to tune in for that. It was pretty exciting. So I'll be back right after this. So for those of you that don't go over to the blog for the regular news updates and information from there, who are only listening to the podcast, have a little exciting news story for you. Scott Kelby from the National Association of Photoshop Professionals has been on tour talking about Adobe Photoshop Lightroom. Now, those of you who are following the podcast should know about the Lightroom photo contest that I am sponsoring. The good folks over at Adobe have offered up a copy of Lightroom to some lucky listener or reader of the blog. All you have to do is submit your pictures over to the Flickr user group, and I'll pick the best of 10. Tom Hogarty will pick the winner. That's going to come up in another week or two, so you're going to want to make sure you get your photos in for that. But that was really more of a side note to the subject of Lightroom, because Scott Kelby came into Denver just last week to give a seminar on Adobe Photoshop Lightroom. And since I was sponsoring the contest and I picked up a little bit on it, thought it might be a good idea to register for that seminar, actually get to see Mr. Kelby in action, and perhaps learn a little bit about Photoshop Lightroom myself. So I signed up for the seminar. And as a regular reader of Scott Kelby's blog, happened to notice when he announced his photo walk, I'll get to that in a minute as well, but he made an announcement about his worldwide photo walks and did a little Q&A on his blog where he provided some questions and answers about what photo walks are, and he snuck a little question in there about Denver, saying he was going to be here for his Lightroom seminar and did anyone know any good places to shoot. Well, of course, being the blogger and the podcaster and active in the web community, I submitted a comment to the blog for him. And I said, "Hey, Scott, if you're going to be in town, you may want to check out A, B, C, D, these kinds of places. Not sure you'll get the sunsets you're looking for. There are thunderstorms forecast, but feel free to check these out. I'll be seeing you over at the seminar on Wednesday," because he wanted to go out shooting Tuesday night. Well, about 4 hours after I made that blog post, I actually got an email from Mr. Kelby, direct email from Scott Kelby, asking if I would be interested in taking him around the downtown area on a photo walk. Needless to say, you could have pushed me over with a feather. I naturally said yes, and I was quite honored and happy to show Scott around. Turns out Scott was a really great guy, very cool, very down to earth. Just like everyone else, he puts his pants on one leg at a time, but I have to say how cool Scott really was. Not only did he invite me to give him sort of a tour or a guide around downtown Denver, but after our little photo walk, he invited me back to the hotel, or not the hotel, the restaurant where he and his staff were having their dinner the night before the show and invited me to share a meal with them. I, of course, said yes, and for the entire meal, heard names like Moose and Scott and Joe and Matt and Dave and Ben and Lori Excel and all these just huge names around the industry, and pretty much kept quiet because I realized, yeah, I'm a little out of my league here. I was just in my mind saying, yeah, I read their blog. Yeah, I read their blog. Yeah, I read their blog. Yep. Visit all those sites every day and realize that, wow, I'm really, truly fortunate to be here among these people who have such a wide variety of experience and knowledge on the subject of photography and photography software. So I wanted to give a special thanks and shout out to Scott Kelby. It was quite generous of him, and it truly was the experience of a lifetime. And as if that wasn't enough, before I left, he said, "Make sure you get there for the seminar tomorrow. We'll save a seat up front for you." And I thought they were just, I shouldn't say just talking, but I really didn't take them too seriously on that, figuring I just, was going to go into the seminar. It'd be too packed anyway. And I got to the seminar the next morning. It started at 10, and got there about 9 o'clock so I could register and go check in and get all my materials and wait in line. So I go up to the registration site, and there is one of the girls from the dinner the night before signing people in, getting people registered, and she said, "Hi, Jason, come on in, Scott's inside, we got a place set up for you." And they let me walk into the room early, and they're up there doing their sound checks, they're getting the projectors all set up, doing the testing, 1, 2, 3. I walk in, and Scott's like, "Hey, Jason, just regular everyday Joe." That's just how cool Scott is. Just front row seat. Couldn't believe it. And then to top things off, ended up sitting next to someone else who won a front row seat to this seminar. Her name escapes me off the top. Tiffany. Tiffany, who it happened to be a friend of mine. On a photo walk, we'd met through Scott Kelby's photo walk actually from the previous year, ended up sitting right next to me for the duration of the show. And we both were twittering about our experience where we were over on Twitter and sharing our thoughts of the seminar with everyone in the Twitter community. And it was kind of funny as we talked to each other on Twitter. And someone actually pointed out on Twitter they couldn't believe we were talking on Twitter when we were actually sitting right next to each other at the seminar. It was rather amusing. It was a very enjoyable experience, though. I will say that the Lightroom seminar that Scott is doing around the country is very much an introductory seminar. He just takes you through all the different modules, takes you through a photo shoot beginning to end. Very introductory, but it gives you a great idea of how to manage your workflow. He showed you how to take images from Lightroom over to Photoshop and then back again. He showed how to do tethered shooting, although there were a couple glitches there. Poor Scott, he had a really tough time with the technical side of things. His Mac had crashed the night before. One laptop had Lightroom crash on it several times. The other laptop, backup laptop that they had, didn't have the Nikon Camera Pro on there. So there were a couple glitches going on, and we all just laughed about it. It's just there's nothing you can do when stuff like that goes wrong. And Scott, true to form, just made it really entertaining and enjoyable regardless. But it was really a useful seminar. Got a couple great tips out of that. But fair warning for those of you, or not warning, I should say, but just as kind of a heads up, the seminar is very much an introductory seminar. Doesn't go down into the nitty-gritty like he does with the Down and Dirty Tricks tour for Photoshop. This is more of an introductory thing to Lightroom. Here's all the features. Here's what it can do. He even did some prints for us on his printer. Of course, they came out the wrong size, but he showed you how to print He showed you how to manage your photos, how to tag your photos, how to take them from Lightroom to Photoshop and back. Like I said, just a really great primer on Lightroom for those of you that aren't up to speed with that yet. I would highly recommend attending the seminar if you haven't had a lot of experience with Lightroom, even though I had downloaded it and installed it and used it for a little bit in preparation for my interview with Tom Hogarty. I still learned quite a bit of information on how to use the program in ways that I did not know prior to the seminar. So it was a great seminar. I wanted to give a quick shout out and thank you to Scott Kelby for giving me the opportunity to experience the couple days that he was in town like that. I really did feel kind of like a superstar. So it was kind of cool hanging with him. Like I said, he's a very cool guy. And that's actually going to be my pick of the week. Go over to scottkelby.com, register for his RSS feed. He's got great info. I go there every day for useful bits and nuggets of information. It's just a lot of information that he has his, on the tips of his fingers. He really does have a good pulse, or a good sense of the pulse of the community, knows what interesting things people like to talk about and hear about, knows how to generate excitement about photography. Just a great guy. He's got a great website, and he's just a fantastic instructor. So that's my pick of the week, is go over to scottkelby.com. It will take you to his blog, and you can see all the useful information that he's got over there. Another thing that if you're not a regular visitor of Scott Kelby's site that you may not know about, that's kind of a news item from around the web, is he announced his photo walk, which I had mentioned earlier. And a photo walk is basically just a group of photographer types that get together. They set up a time and a location and say, let's go take pictures together. And when you're done, you usually go out for a bite to eat or grab a drink or a cup of coffee or something and talk about the day of shooting and talk about techniques and things like that. And it's really more of a social event. But because it does have the theme of photography, photography is very much a subject of conversation, how to do different techniques, how to do different post-processing. It's a great way to network, great way to meet other people that share your same interests and hobbies. And Scott Kelby announced his second annual photo walk over on the blog, I think last week now. There are two photo walks now going on here in Denver. I registered for the first of them with the same group that I participated with last year, so it'll be good to meet up with everyone else again. Check your own city. Go to worldwidephotowalk.com. I'll throw a link to that in the blog notes for this week's podcast. But if you go to worldwidephotowalk.com, you can see if your city is listed. If it is listed, make sure you sign up. If it isn't listed, you can register to be a leader of a photo walk in your city, and I would encourage you to do so. But that was just a great experience, one that I wanted to share with the listening community. When we come back after the break, believe it or not, we're going to have to shift over to the listener questions, because we have quite a few questions that I wanted to cover this week. Some really great ones that were contributed both via the comments section of the blog as well as directly via email. So I would encourage you to stick around for that. A lot of good information, follow-up information in some cases about some blog posts, and new information, possibly something that I can go into more detail with in future blog posts and podcasts. So do stop back after the break to hear the latest on that, and also to get the final details on the Adobe Lightroom contest that I am running right now. The giveaway will officially end, well, I'm not even going to tell you right now. Tune in after the break to find out when the giveaway officially ends, where you can go to post your photos, and what the rules are for contributing photos to the giveaway. So come back after the break, and we'll wrap things up with the listener questions, answers, and the giveaway. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Learning Digital Photography. We've got five listener questions this week that I'd like to get to, which is why I'm going to take about 20 minutes to talk about all five of these questions. Like I said at the end of the last segment, these questions came in from both the comments on the blog and directly via email. So I'm going to go ahead and just jump right into them. and give the answers that I gave to the individuals and that I also shared on the blog to some degree, and I'll also share with you now. So just, and that's kind of a, just to let you know, if you do ask me a question over on the blog, whether it's in the comment section or via email or whatever method you prefer, you can ask me on Twitter as well. I do answer every question that comes in, of course, photography related questions. I've had to delete a couple spam type comment slash questions that were rather inappropriate, but if it's photography related or if it's just something you want to know about how I shoot or anything like that, by all means, feel free to submit your comments over on the blog. You can email me. The address is jason@kennonblogger.com. You can ask me on Twitter. My handle on Twitter is cbjason for Kennon Blogger Jason. So there's a lot of different ways of getting a hold of me to ask questions, share your thoughts, provide feedback, that kind of thing. Our first question, though, comes to us from Mark. He actually posted this in the comment section of the blog. And Mark asked, I'll just read his comment back. I copied these out and printed them on a sheet of paper to refer to. And Mark basically said, "I'd like to know when and if Canon plans to produce a wide zoom that will work with either a full frame or 40D that is in the similar focal length to the current lens." Mark was actually talking about the 10 to 22 millimeter. That's a lens I have in my gear bag. I've been doing a lot of reviews of gear lately, and I will have some Sigma gear coming up as well in the future. But in answer to Mark's question, the 10 to 22 focal length lens from Canon is an EFS lens, so that does mean that it's designed to work with the crop sensor frame cameras. He was asking whether or not Canon plans to produce a wide zoom that will work with either a full frame or a 40D. Mark, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the 40D is not a full frame camera. It is my main camera body, actually. And with the 40D and the 10 to 22 lens, I'm actually able to get some very nice shots. It's a great choice for wide angle photography. And believe it or not, there are adapters that allow you to mount the EFS lenses onto full frame sensors. You will get a little bit of a vignette around the edges of the frame that you'll have to crop out, but you can use these wide angle lenses, these EFS lenses actually, on full frame sensor cameras. It's just you do have to add one more step to your post processing to crop that part out if you so desire. It's not the best answer because I actually do not know what Canon's plans are with regard to research and development. They don't share their R&D plans with me. I don't know why. After all, I'm certainly listening, so if they would like me to post news and information here on the blog, Chuck Westhall, if you're listening, I would be happy to share news and information about Canon gear here at Canon Blogger. So if you are listening, I would be interested very much in sharing information about your product line as it becomes available to answer questions like Mark's. So, thank you, Mark, for writing in with that question. It actually is a good question because it does speak to research and development. And just to also let people know that even though I do shoot with Canon bodies and I have a lot of Canon equipment, I am not affiliated or associated with Canon specifically. They don't share R&D information with me. I actually review products and own products that are not Canon specific. I own a Sigma 70 lens. I've got some other products that are not Canon specific. I've got some radio popper, or not radio poppers, some wireless triggers that are definitely not made by Canon. I've got Bogen tripods. I'm not solely tied and or married to the Canon family. Just because a lot of my gear tends towards that end doesn't mean I shoot and deal with Canon gear exclusively. So that was kind of a good question from Mark because I probably should be clarifying that from time to time, that there really is no affiliation or association with Canon. They are their own company, and I don't speak for them or on their behalf. So thank you, Mark, for the question. I'm sorry I couldn't answer it more completely, except to say that the 10 to 22 millimeter lens that I reviewed on my blog actually does fit the 40D. That's what my gear combo actually is. So I can confirm that the 40D is a crop sensor lens. The 10 to 22 does work on that lens. Thanks to Mark. Moving right along. Our second question comes to us from Chris, also from the comments section of the blog. And Chris wrote in to ask about the the HDR post that I had done a while back on how to set your bracketing exposure settings to take HDR or high dynamic range photography. His question, I'll just read his question. I'm still sort of confused about how the trick goes. Is there any sort of visual media that shows this technique, like a video or some pictures with the instructions underneath? I'm still not getting it, and I'm a visual guy, so it would really help me to see it. This kind of ties into question three, so I'm going to read question three as well. Question three comes to us from Chuck Conder via email. As you recall, he's the one from Louisville, Kentucky. Chuck wrote in to say, "Hey Jason, I just wanted to say thanks. Your podcasts are full of info, and I enjoy them. I heard you on Leo's podcast, so I'm new to your site." It's kind of a sidebar here. I actually was on the Tech Guy Labs show with Leo Laporte a couple weeks ago. I had called in to ask him a question. I forget what the question is now, or was now, but he answered the question for me. It was a very technical question, I guess. And I guess Chuck picked up the blog here at Canon Blogger from that podcast and was very generous in taking the time to write in and say his question, which is also HDR related. I'll continue on with his question. Anyway, my question is about HDR. I'm using CS4 and Photomatix. I've reviewed lots of HDR images. I'm not sure, as a newbie to the industry, which way to go with my images. Many of the HDR images are blown out with clarity lowered and seems a bit like a painting or animated. Others are very clear and bold. I enjoy both, as a matter of fact. That's why I bought the digital SLR camera. If you could clear this up or spend a minute to define the different types of HDR and what you consider an HDR image, I would appreciate it. So thank you to Chuck and Chris for writing in to ask about the HDR techniques and methods. First, to answer Chris's question, if you go to the blog post that I did from yesterday, I actually just did a short video tutorial describing two methods on how to bracket your exposures. Basically, there's two methods out there for Canon gear anyway that I know of you can use to bracket your exposures to then seam together for HDR type photography. The first method is auto exposure bracketing. That's where you let the camera adjust the setting for you. I would always recommend shooting in shutter priority when you are shooting HDR images. So if you have your camera set to auto bracket one exposure over and one exposure under, all you have to do is point, focus, and shoot three times in succession, and the camera will adjust that from the correct exposure to one stop under and then one stop over. And you can take those three images and process them in your image editor of choice. I think what some people were having some questions about that I'd seen over on the blog and from links to other resources, the big question is whether or not you can set auto exposure bracketing for more than three exposures. From what I understand, the way the Canon camera gear works, no, you cannot. Auto exposure bracketing is limited to three, where it'll do the correct exposure and then one over, one under, or two over, two under, or however you define it from the camera menus. Which brings us to the second technique for capturing bracketed exposures. The second technique is to actually make the exposure adjustments yourself. And like I said, if you're shooting in shutter priority, which on Canon is usually the TV mode on your dial, if you set the shutter speed to the correct exposure and for the aperture that you want with the ISO settings you want, you'll notice that from where the slider on your digital readout display shows dead center. And when it shows dead center, you know you've got good exposure based on your focusing point. From there, and this will depend on how your camera's set up, if your camera is set up for one-third stop increments, half stop increments, or full stop increments, you'll either adjust your shutter speed down two clicks, or excuse me, yeah, two clicks, four clicks, or six clicks to get to two stops under. So basically, you find out what the correct exposure is, roll it down so that it's two stops underexposed, and that way you can move up from, and then that's when you would start taking pictures. So you find the correct exposure, roll down to two stops under, take your first shot, roll up to one stop underexposed, take a picture there, roll up the two stops, one stop or three stops to correct exposure, and take a shot from there, and then you can go to one over and then two over, and that way you can get a five exposure bracketing. The other little trick that I mentioned, I think, to Chris on the blog, actually I think this was to someone else, they asked if there was a way to massage the images afterwards for a greater latitude. There is, it's called double processing your images, where you can actually take an image, pull it into Photoshop as a smart object, and in the Adobe Camera Raw, push the exposure value down to -1, and then bring it in a second time and bring the exposure over to +1 or on the mark, and you can actually double process the image that way, and you can overlay them to at least give the appearance of HDR imagery. It's kind of cheating. I don't really enjoy using it that way, and it's also more difficult to cover up without it being too obvious. You really do want to capture as wide a range of bracketed exposures as you can. For those of you that are first starting out, I would recommend starting out with the auto exposure bracketing, so that way you know it's getting done right for you in camera. Once you get more confident, you can go to the manual adjustments, where you have your camera set to TV exposure, and then just dial your shutter value up and down to capture a wider range than what AEB will allow for. So thank you to Chris and to Chuck for the questions on HDR. Those are some great questions. HDR is really popular these days. I'm going to move on now to the second half of Chuck's question, where he talks about the different types of HDR and how to process for it. So in that regard, I would actually like to take a brief recess and come back and talk about the two methods of processing HDR images. And I'll be back in just a moment to take care of that. Okay, thank you for tuning back in, and sorry for the short break there. Just before the break, I was talking about Chris and Chuck's questions on HDR, and said I was going to take a short break, come back, and talk about the second half of Chuck's question, which is how to process HDR, the different types of processing methods that are out there. I think this is actually a really good question, because it does speak to the two different schools of thought, if you will, on how to process HDR images. The first school of thought, I've seen a lot of people refer to this as the Harry Potter effect, where you really process the heck out of it, you get as wide a tonal range as possible, almost give it that magical look or that animated cartoon look, and it can be very appealing if done correctly. And it's a very, like I said, it's a very appealing approach. It can appear magical. It can really make you do a double take. I've seen a lot of this kind of effect over at flyingwithfish.com. He's a great HDR processor there. I forget the guy's name that does that site, but Flying with Fish is a good example of the Harry Potter effect type of HDR photography. It can be very powerful. You can look at some of these images and just go, oh my god, just really amazing images, amazing tonal range that he's capturing and bringing into a single scene. It's just very impressive work there. So that's one approach where you can get that kind of magical glimmering effect, what a lot of people call the Harry Potter effect, and it has a certain amount of appeal inside the photography community. So having said that, that's the one approach that we see a lot of out there, and the other is the almost undetectable HDR approach, where you try and capture as wide a tonal range as you can, but not have it give the appearance of HDR, to where you almost can't tell it's an HDR image and unless you knew what to look for. And good examples of this are actually in architectural photography. A lot of times in architecture photography, you'll have sunlight coming in through windows, and then you'll have pretty dark shaded areas inside a house. So if you're capturing interior scenes and you want the windows open, you can have a wider tonal range than what normally would be viewable within a photo. And what a lot of really good architectural photographers do is HDR work, where they seam several images together that have different tonal ranges so that you can get the natural appearance of sunlight coming through the windows, and you can also have a detail in your shadows inside the house. And normally one exposure won't accommodate that, especially if there's bright sun. So architectural photography is really a good example of that. And what Chuck's question was, when he sent his picture in, he actually sent a picture in to ask for some feedback on it, and I thought it was a great photo. It was a great composition, but I did notice that it seemed like Chuck was trying to kind of combine the two effects, where he was trying to combine the Harry Potter effect and the realistic effect, and he did a pretty good job of it. He's actually got a very good technique towards approaching HDR photography. But in thinking about it and looking at his images, but the one that he sent me, and then at his portfolio over on Flickr, I do have to say that I think when you look at different approaches to photography, it's always good to come up with your own style and try and take the best of both worlds, or the best of whatever different approaches that you're looking at for whatever type of photography you're looking at. But I think HDR actually might be the exception. I really think that's one where you probably cannot effectively combine the two approaches, because you're either going to go for the animated effect or you want the realistic effect. And you can't have realism and surrealism at the same time. I don't know, maybe you can, but for my eye, it doesn't seem like that would be something that would be at least easy to attain. I want to laud Chuck for his efforts, but in seeing his images and what he's trying to do, I'm really not sure there's a way to do that, because it's either going to come off as looking too painted if you try and make it realistic as well as animated, like the Harry Potter look. So it'll be clearly processed, and that's kind of what you want to avoid with the realistic approach. So I'm not sure that's going to be an effective path to take for defining a style, unless of course that's the style that you want. And that's where it gets really subjective, because if you like a particular style, who's to tell you that that style is incorrect or inappropriate? I don't really like to get into subjective evaluations of individual photographs, because I think Chuck actually has a great style, a great approach, and he's got great vision, and it's just a unique perspective. It's one I hadn't seen before, where you combine the two. I personally don't think it's my style, but that doesn't necessarily make the style of his choosing wrong. It's a different approach. It's one I hadn't seen before. I think he's got he may have something there. For me, that's not something I really wish to pursue, because like I said, it seems like it's trying to combine opposite extremes, where I'm not sure you really can have a marrying of the two styles. But I would encourage Chuck and or anyone else to prove me wrong on that. Like I said, he's got some great images, he's got some great thoughts on the whole process. So if you're interested, I'll also put a link to Chuck's photos that he had up on Flickr, or to his profile up on Flickr, and you can look at his photo stream there and decide for yourself. So thank you to Chuck for writing in. You actually posed a really great question about the different approaches to HDR. I really don't think there's a right way or a wrong way. I know which way I favor. Rather than say that here, I'll just leave that for everyone to guess. But I really don't think combining two different styles is really as effective an approach as the two more popular approaches that are out there. I think each approach has a certain appeal for different types of photography and for different types of people. So anyway, that's just the thoughts that I had on the HDR processing that does seem to be the latest rage to hit the photo industry. It's been pretty popular for probably about 2 years now. One of the things that Chuck had mentioned in his question was the use of Photomatix. I have used that, and I would highly recommend using that. Photomatix does seem to be the rapidly becoming, anyway, the industry standard for processing HDR photos. Much better than anything native to Photoshop, much better than anything native in GIMP or anything like that, or even in Corel, I think, is the other one. So if you're going to be processing HDR images, Photomatix, I would say, is definitely the way to go. It's got a great way to provide tone mapping, pretty intuitive sliders and controls on how to adjust things there. So I think Chuck is on the right path. He's, like he said, he's using CS4 and Photomatix, so he's got a pretty good combination of tools there to get the effect that he's looking for. But thanks again to Chris and Chuck for the HDR questions. That they really were some excellent questions. Hopefully I answered them to your satisfaction. Next question that came in actually came to me from Heather Smith. Heather Smith is a Denver native. She wrote in via email. And Heather wrote in saying, I was reading through your blog and not able to find anything in the past regarding your opinions on EFS lenses. I'm very curious if there's anything on your blog or if you would be willing to post a blog about your opinions. As a non-full-frame sensor shooter, just got my 40D the other day, woohoo, I previously was shooting the Rebel XTI, and as someone who intends to stick with my crop sensor for a while, I am seriously considering investing in a couple of lenses. But there is no way I can afford L-glass at this time. I'm thinking on the Canon EFS 18-200 IS or combining the 18-55 EFS IS and the 55-250. Sorry about that. I had to read through all those numbers there. It kind of blended together there. And then also considering the 10-22 that I had reviewed on the blog recently. She's read tons about them on DP Review and the Digital Picture, but I would really love to know your thoughts, any opinions, etc. Please let me know what you think. Regards, Heather. Thank you very much, Heather. For those of you that don't know, Heather actually... it turns out that was another person from recent photo walks and meetup groups that I had known from a previous group association. And we had talked after the seminar as well that Scott Kelby had done. So that's actually a friend that had written into the blog, and I asked her if I could use the questions. She said, sure. So I'm just going to share with the listening audience my random thoughts on the EFS lenses. In comparison with the EF lenses. It's kind of just a little background here. The EFS lenses were actually designed intentionally for crop factor cameras. So if you're going to be using a crop sensor lens, or excuse me, a crop sensor camera, and so the point there is that if you're going to be using a crop sensor camera, the lenses are designed for your camera. While they will work on the full frame, like I said earlier, you'll get a vignette around the edges since the sensor area is larger than the diameter of the lens itself. They make adapters where you can attach them on, and then you have to crop that vignette out in post-production. Many people don't like to do this size differential with the extra step. So as a whole, the EFS series of lenses is written off as incompatible with full-frame sensors like the 1DS Mark II and the 1D Mark II, or excuse me, the 1DS Mark III and the 1D Mark III and the 5D Mark II and all those. And it's kind of a misnomer because you can get them to work. They're just not as seamlessly functional with the full-frame cameras that Canon has in their lineup. And if you look carefully at the mounting mechanisms, they all do look pretty much the same in terms of how the ridges and lenses spin onto one another. So it's really just a matter of finding the adapter that will connect it on there and let it work. And the reason why you need that adapter is because the furthest element furthest to the rear in the EFS lenses can get too close to the sensor inside the camera, so when it slaps open, it can actually shatter your glass, and you don't want to do that, so you need that little adapter to provide just a little extra gap for those EFS lenses so they won't smash into each other. And that gap is needed, but you don't ever want to mount an EFS lens directly onto a full-frame sensor camera for that specific reason. So that's just kind of an FYI. You can get them to work, though, but like I said, you will see some vignetting if you use a crop sensor lens on a full-frame sensor camera. But regardless, the whole point there is that you can get them to work, so it's really just not a matter of whether or not they work. It's a matter of whether or not you're okay with the extra steps needed, because you would need to get the attachment to put between the EFS lens and then the full-frame sensor. You would have to crop out a vignette in post-production if you didn't want that there. So there are a couple of caveats to going that route. The comparison that I think really is more relevant, and what I think Heather was alluding to in her question, is the one of optics. And for me, the added step of cropping out of a vignette isn't that big a deal, because you can always automate that process for both portrait and landscape pictures, actually. So for me, it's really a question of optics. And in that regard, I really don't think there's a single lens Canon puts out there that is really all that bad. If you look at my experience with Canon lenses, I've used quite a few of them actually. From the EFS series of lenses, I've used the 18-55, the 18-55 IS, the 75-300, and of course the 10-22, two of which are still currently in my gear bag. And I love my 10-22. I've reviewed it. You all know how I feel about the 10-22. It's a great wide-angle lens. I think it's the widest wide-angle lens that's non-fisheye that Canon has out there. It's a fantastic lens. It's not an L lens, so it does not have the L quality optics, but I think for the lens that it is and for the cost of the lens, it really is dollar for dollar one of the best lenses in my bag. So I really do enjoy the EFS lenses. If you look at the EF lenses that I have used, those include the 70-200. That is an L lens. That's the F4. I've also used the 28-135 and the 50 F1.8, 50mm F1.8, the Nifty 50, if you will, and also the Canon 100mm F2 lens. So I've used four EFS and four EF lenses. So I've got about eight lenses that I've put my hands on from Canon, split pretty evenly between the EF and the EFS mount systems. All provide fantastic, exceptional image quality. You really can't go wrong with anything from Canon, regardless of whether it's made for crop factor or full frame. So, in answer to your question, I'm not sure you would be unsatisfied with any EFS lenses. Having said that, there are some optical variations between the not so much the EF and the EFS lenses, but more the standard Canon glass and the L range of Canon glass. The sweet spot is obviously going to be a lot wider. You'll have a wider sweet spot in terms of your aperture opening. The sharpness will be a lot sharper. The quality of images are always going to be a little bit better on your L lenses because they put more research and development into them. They have more elements inside each L series lens, so there's more glass in there, there's more equipment in there. Like I said, there's more research and development in there. So of course the L lenses will be more expensive, but you will see significant returns on your investment in that regard. Having said that, I do think that Canon probably will produce better quality lenses for Canon gear than pretty much any third-party lens out there. And actually, I shouldn't say that anymore because I have not purchased a third-party lens in a while. I had a Tamron for a while. I still currently own the Sigma 70mm macro, which I actually love. I think actually that is on par with Canon's similar macro. The Canon has a 100mm macro. Obviously, you can stem back a little further on that. But when it comes to the standard Canon glass versus third-party glass, dollar for dollar, you're usually going to get better quality optics from Canon directly. So, and of course, that is very generic. I'm getting actually a couple lenses from Sigma here, which I had mentioned earlier in the podcast. I'll be reviewing those. And I know they've upped their game quite a bit in recent years, so I'll be looking forward to those reviews and seeing how those lenses perform. With that in mind, I probably should say that there really is no lens on the market today that is just going to be completely inferior, with one possible exception that I won't say out loud. Because I wouldn't want to embarrass Quantaray too badly. Oh, I just said it. Well, because I don't want to call anybody out. I'm not big on calling out camera vendors or people in that regard. It's just my own personal observations. I've never been too thrilled with Quantaray. Tamron, you get what you pay for. You know, they actually make higher quality glass as well, and you're going to pay more for that. It would still be less than what Canon or Nikon offered in similar focal lengths and feature sets, for example, IS or USM or things like that. IS being image stabilization and USM being ultra silent motor operation, because they do have these features across all lens families. It's just a matter of learning the different acronyms. I'll get into that more when we get the Sigma lenses in for review, though. But to kind of touch back on Heather's question, it really doesn't matter what lenses you have at this point. It's a matter of what focal lengths you want. Like I said, you're not going to get a bad lens. The one thing to consider, though, is that for the Canon lineup, their current lineup, they actually only have seven EFS lenses in their lineup, and they've got like 30 or 40 lenses, or possibly even more than that. I haven't counted them. But it just because they only have seven in their lineup and all the others are EF, they're going to put more research and development in their EF lenses. You're going to see superior performance in those. So, can you save money by sticking to an EFS lens? Absolutely. Will you get less than satisfactory results with an EFS lens? Probably not. It's really just a matter of financial ability. Now, if you're willing to pay more for some of the superior optics, I would actually recommend doing so. For me, when I have the money, I do not find myself looking more at the EFS lineup saying, I can save $30 here, or I actually will pay the difference, and I don't know if it's 30, but whatever the price difference is, I actually will look to buy the most expensive glass I can afford. And in general, that's a good rule of thumb to go by. I know a lot of people in the industry say when you buy into a camera system, you really are buying into a camera system. Bodies come and go. As evidence from Canon, Nikon, and all the vendors out there, you're seeing new camera bodies about every year, year and a half. So bodies come and go. It's the glass that really is going to stick around and stay and retain its value over time. So when you are in the market to purchase glass, I would go as expensive as you can. I know you don't like. Yeah, I know Heather said that she didn't have the money to go with the L lenses right now, which is unfortunate. Your best bet might actually be rentals for the time being. There's actually a place here in Denver called Cameron, which is in downtown Denver. I think they're, well, I won't go with local stuff, but there's a local place in Denver that Heather could rent from for online rentals. You can actually go with to lensrental.com. They offer some good resources. I'll throw a link to that in the blog notes as well. And their rates actually are very good too. So renting lenses is always an option if you don't want to shell out the money for the higher quality optics of L series glass from Canon. So that is Heather's question. Hopefully that answers the question about EFS versus EF lenses and the L quality glass that Canon puts out. Coming into our last question, because I'm getting on near an hour here, I told you, questions always take a long time to answer. I'm going to apologize in advance to Alex. I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Alex Boghere, Boghere. He had made a comment back on the doing the wireless trigger. I had mentioned a way to do it that is pretty cost effective where you don't have to use Canon gear actually because it is rather pricey. And he asked if I had used this device from Engadget that works for an Nikon rig. It's basically a USB triggered iFi where you can connect the USB to your computer and the other end to your camera, and that will send your pictures wirelessly over for tethered shooting without the tether. And he it seemed like it was a pretty vendor neutral setup because it uses the mini USB and the USB. Alex asked if I had given that a try. The answer is I have not, but he is looking at picking it up and using it with his Rebel T1i, I think that is. I think that's the Rebel 500 or Rebel 5000 or 550. I'm losing track with all the numbers these days, but it seems like it would be a good fix. I'm just going to read off Alex's full comment here that he posted on the blog. Here's a tutorial on Engadget for that Nikon rig. They use a wireless USB dongle, a AA battery pack, and an angled USB adapter. I haven't tried it yet myself, but the concept is pretty straightforward. I don't see why it wouldn't be a pretty good fix, although I'm pretty new to the DSLR scene. I'm about to order the new Rebel T1i in a few more days. Let me ha know how it works out if and when you do try it. Here's the link. I'll go ahead and post that link to the USB dongle for the wireless functionality. And if anyone wants to try that, I'm probably not going to try that. I'm actually saving for the CyberSyncs from AlienBees. Those have been in my radar for a couple weeks now. I haven't picked them up yet. I've been meaning to. At one point, I actually did pick them up and then had to return them because of some financial issues. But I'm looking to get the CyberSyncs and keep them on hand. So I'm probably not going to give the Engadget device a try. But for those of you that are interested in the do-it-yourself
cheap slash economical method. This would be something to consider if you're looking at doing some tethered shooting without having to deal with all the cables. There wasn't really a question from Alex, it was more a comment and feedback question. If I'd ever tried that, the answer to the question, of course, is no, and I probably will not plan on trying it because I am looking at getting something a little more higher end that I can rely on a little more. For doing tethered shooting, things of that nature, especially when I'm looking at doing a off-camera flash for different lighting scenarios as well, because yeah, I would imagine you can use them in that capacity too, if the gear will accommodate. But anyway, that was Alex's post question slash comment. Wasn't really a question per se. He's just asking if I'd use that gear. I hadn't. It looks like it might work though. If anyone is interested in giving it a whirl and sharing their thoughts with me here over on the blog. Feel free to do so and contact me. I always would be interested in bringing readers on the show, featuring readers. So if anyone has Skype and would like to participate on some level, shoot me an email. If we've got enough material, I'd be happy to bring you on the show. Ways that you can get a hold of me because we're wrapping things up here. The first way, of course, as always, is over at the blog. I do monitor all the comments and try to respond to as many as I can. I do try to respond to every email that comes in. Like I said, if it's spammy or not photography related, I usually don't. But if it's photography related, I do try to get back to everyone. The email address, as always, is jason@canonblogger.com. And if you are picking up the podcast from the feed over at Personal Life Media, there is a link there to come over to the blog for the show notes as well. The last thing I wanted to address after these listener questions were finished was the Adobe Photoshop Lightroom contest. The end is coming up. I had been saying on Twitter and on the blog that there are 3 days left, 2 days left, 1 day left. This day, Friday today, is the last weekday for the contest. The contest is going until the end of May. The end of May is actually on Sunday. So, come Monday, that contest will be closed. Any images posted after Sunday will not be considered. I'm going to start looking at the images next week. I've already started kind of winnowing things down a little bit, but I don't want to discourage people from entering their photos. If you go over to Flickr.com and do a search for Learning Digital Photography Lightroom Contest, you will be able to find the contest thread there. I'm also going to post a link to this in the blog notes. So if you're driving somewhere, or riding your bike, or on the treadmill at the gym, don't stop to write this down. I'll provide links to all the websites that I referenced in today's podcast. But the end is near. The contest is almost over. You only got a couple days left. You got today, Saturday, and Sunday to get out there, shoot some images. Process what you can. I'd prefer to see you do it in Lightroom, but you don't have to. A lot of people were asking about that. I'd like to see Lightroom because that's what we're giving away. But if you haven't had a chance to download it or are working with an existing workflow and just want to get some images in, I can understand that as well. So the Lightroom processing requirement is not a hard and fast rule. Again, like I said, I'd like to see it because of the very nature of the contest, but it's not a requirement. The only requirement is you have to take the pictures in May and you have to post them to that Flickr thread. Of course, it goes without saying that the images do have to be work safe, family friendly kinds of images. I had to apologize to one person who had posted a rather risque image because I hadn't qualified that earlier. But in saying that now, I would like to encourage everyone to share work safe, family friendly. To share work safe and family friendly photos. Wow, that's a tongue twister right there. Share your work safe and family friendly photos over in the Flickr photo thread for learning digital photography. Get those images in by Sunday to make sure you're eligible for the Adobe Photoshop Lightroom contest. I'll be taking my 10 favorites and sending those over to Tom Hogarty from Adobe, and he'll pick from those to declare a winner who will get a free copy of Adobe Photoshop Lightroom. This has a retail value of $300, folks. This is a really great deal. So make sure you get out, get shooting this weekend, take some pictures, post them in. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on our next episode. Coming up on episode number 24 next time. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Take care, everyone. Bye.